Broadsheet Radio Network.
Pals, guess what? Guess what? It's episode one of season two of Under the Kilt. Welcome back!
We're back!
Yes!
And I'm still here, sucker. Deal with it.
So what have you been up to, apart from, you know, watching your bad things happening in your country?
Mostly that. Every day is a new disaster.
I mean, we can't say, I can't say, you know, that we're not as bad.
I mean, you're just on a slight delay.
Yeah. It's like sometimes I feel at Westminster are like, we want to be like that too.
We're real trendsetters, but it's not about that.
No, it's not. So anyway, like, I mean, it's been so long. Do you remember what to do?
I know that I have something under the kilt.
Which is?
Oh, I have an LP of Sunshine on Leith by The Proclaimers under my kilt.
And do you have anything to play that with?
Nope. It's just for aesthetic.
Are you just turning up to parties hoping that someone's got a record player?
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
Pretty public fine. Places.
Excellent. So, but what's really under the kilt?
Oh, is that not what's really under the kilt? I think we have a guest who could tell us what's really under the kilt.
We absolutely do. And our first guest of season two is a belter. We have got an actor, writer and director from Glasgow in Scotland. She's been all over the place. She has worked extensively, been to LA, directing in award-winning theatre, massive theatre credits, and probably most known for Outlander. Maybe she'll say, no, that's not true, but Outlander, playing Amy McCallum. And I was just saying that, or McCallum, sorry, and I'm up to date with Outlander, and I never ever thought I would say that.
It's a lot to catch up on if you didn't start with it.
And, well, yeah, exactly. It was a bit of a mountain to climb, but I got in there and just thoroughly enjoyed it. But everyone, pals, our first guest is Joanne Thompson. Welcome, Joanne, to the show.
Hello.
Hey. Hello there.
Hello.
Sounds like a neighbor just popping over the fence. Like,
hello. I know. Oh, actually, I sound like Mrs. Doubtfire when she's got the pie on her face or the cream in her face. Hello. Yeah, that's what happens. Yeah, what an entrance.
Joanne, I know that you've just finished a film as well, haven't you? Like, is it called Kill or something?
It's called Kill. Set in Scotland, and a pretty much full Scottish cast. So very
amazing.
Scottish. It is not a comedy. It's good. And I was working with some really good pals of mine that have been like friends of mine for, yeah, like 10 years.
And Dan Portman was in it as well, wasn't he?
He was. And Paul Higgins as well. So that was great.
That's a great cast then.
Had a ball. I mean, it was grim. I was like, lots of mud and
that's weird. Because, like, you know, you say Scottish film and I think comedy. Scotland very much known for very lighthearted comedy.
Well, here it's either comedy or like
murder.
Yeah, basically. That seems to be the things that get greenlit. Yeah. Nothing else happens here.
Calling in from Chicago, that's exactly what people expect from us.
Yeah.
So, Joanne, what else has been happening? Where are you just now, anyway?
I'm in Leeds, sunny Leeds. So, yeah, but it is, like, extremely sunny today. It was, like, 22 degrees, and I was out in my sandals, would you believe?
My sandals.
Don't get that in Glasgow. In fact, it was a nice day when I got on the train, like, yesterday. It's always a nice day when I've got on a train. Every time.
Beautiful, wherever you're
I watch it from a window. Fast.
So, Joanne, what are you doing here?
What am I doing here?
Yeah.
I really love homework. So I thought, let me do a research project.
What podcast going to go on when I've got to do homework?
I mean, when you asked me to be on, I was like, oh no, because history is not my bag. I hated history at school. Yeah, I mean, I did love homework, and I have a big writing deadline that I need to put off. So I thought, hey, you know, why not spend a couple of hours doing this? But yeah, it kind of it reminded me what I hate about history. And I think it's the fear of getting years wrong. Does anyone else feel that? I'm like, oh, God forbid I get like the year wrong and everybody's like, fuck you. So I think I've always liked things like Outlander or things that are like about historical fiction a bit more. I feel like I absorb more with that because I'm like, oh, it's about, you know, the heart of humanity and things that like, I'm like, I'm so, it's still such a novel idea that people felt the same things that I feel now back then. I'm like, wow, didn't know, cool. So anything that like makes me feel that, I'm like, I'm there for, rather than the academic side of it. But yeah, so you asked me, well, you know, it can be a subject that I know nothing about or something I know something about. And this is a bit of both because I decided to do it on the Scottish suffragettes. And I didn't really know anything about Scottish suffragettes, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I learned about it in school in the history class. I hated. I was bored out of my mind. I didn't. Yep. There was no one cared to like say, and this is why you're able to learn and have jobs now. You know, like no one like brought it around to the 21st century. So, I have actually played a suffragette before. I played a suffragette in a BBC docudrama called The Suffragettes with Lucy Worsley, who's an incredible historian here. And it won a BAFTA. So it was not too shabby. Yeah, it was great. And
it was all right.
It was okay. And I played a real life suffragette called Mary Lee, who was the first suffragette to be force-fed within the fight. So I had to be not actually force-fed, but we did a scene where, you know, I like walk into the cell and I'm held down on the chair. And I actually broke the chair in half, this massive, expensive antique chair. Like I broke it in half with my struggle. So I committed. But yeah, it was so weird to do that because it was just like, it just seems like a lifetime ago. Like it just seems like so, and it wasn't even that long ago. Yeah, so it came out on like the 100th anniversary.
Was it off the back of that you were like, I want to look more into it?
I actually started you know, reading more about suffragettes in general, and then I started writing as well about one specific suffragette, an incredible story that I'm sure is optioned up to the hilt, but already. But I'm actually thinking of I've started in my head writing a comedy about suffragettes, and now I want to make it Scottish suffragettes because these stories are wild. So yeah,
strap in
boys and girls.
I have a fun fact.
I have
a fun fact. Did you know that the word suffragette was originally pejorative, and so it's really just suffragists, but the jolly old English to kind of cast doubt and spurn and kind of ridicule on the women suffragists started referring to them as suffragettes to kind of undercut them. And so more quote unquote radical suffragettes kind of reclaimed the term to kind of be like, well, if we own it and if we take it for ourselves, like you see with a lot of derogatory terms, if we take it for ourselves and we own it, then it's not an insult anymore, because it is like, when you think about it, it makes sense. You're like, what an unnecessarily gendered word. To just be like, well, these suffragists are different just because it's for the women's right to vote. But the more you know.
Yeah, language is important, isn't it? It's powerful.
Language is power. Yes, I didn't know that in that much detail, but I think it was in the back of my head somewhere that I remember it being like a thing that they claimed. Yeah, they did.
Excellent.
Yes, so I do, just before I dive into this topic, just because hopefully people stay till the end, but I do want to just give a shout out to where I found this information, because there are some really hard working women covering this already that I want to say where I got them from, because yeah. So an incredible source I found was a woman called Sarah Sheridan, who's a brilliant writer with this ridiculous wealth of knowledge. And she wrote a book basically on this called Where Are the Women? And I've asked for it for my birthday. And it talks about the lesser known women who shaped Scotland. So yes, definitely going to be reading that. She's Sarah Sheridan on Twitter, and also Protests and Suffragettes, which is Scott Suffragette on Twitter, are like this group that are completely just getting information out there about Scottish suffragettes that I had absolutely no idea about. And yeah, some women at the Women's History Scotland Steering Committee. Yeah, so they pulled together some great resources. So this Amazing. Is their resources, basically, because I knew none of this information. And I was like, let me collate it all. But yeah, so obviously in 2018, we celebrated the centenary of the 1918 Representation of the People Act, which awarded the vote to women of 30 years and over who had the relevant property qualifications, whatever the hell that means. So obviously that's kind of the year that's celebrated, but it wasn't actually until 1928 that all women over the over 21 had the right to vote. So that was when they actually had the same terms as men. So basically last year. But yeah, so I'm going to speak about my five favorite Scottish suffragettes. Does that sound good?
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. Sounds gorge.
Interject if you need questions that I probably won't have the answer to. But yeah, so first up, we have Marion Wallace Dunlop. So she was from Inverness and she was a graffiti artist. What the hell? Yeah, total badass. She made these like stencils for women so that they could like just pop into places and do some quick graffiti without getting caught.
That's what Banksy does.
Yeah.
So Banksy.
Yeah, she's basically Banksy, exactly. Yeah, she's great. So in 1909, she went into the House of Commons and she stamped, using her wonderful graffiti, a notice about an upcoming women's meeting on the wall. And the police caught her and they escorted her out. And afterwards, apparently, two men had to work for 2 hours to remove the ink from the wall because she's that good and really likes to soak it into that stonework, soak it in. And then she returned 2 days later disguised as an elderly lady and did it again. What an absolute legend.
That's amazing.
So she was detained by the police obviously done for that. And she was ordered to pay a £5 fine in damages, but like most of the suffragettes, she opted to spend a month in prison instead. So a lot of them would get fined for things, but they would go into prison instead. On the third day, so it turns out, obviously, you know, she doesn't know that this is what this is setting up or up for, but she was the first person campaigning to go on hunger strike. So she was the very first person to do it after her graffiti went tits up. So on her third day in prison, she refused breakfast and she wrote to the Prime Minister at the time demanding the treatment that's due to a political prisoner. And she explained very calmly that she would not eat until either that happened or she was released. And they would like make her up all these meals and this table full of food to her cell. And she was threatened with being like force fed. She continued to like not eat anything. And then eventually she was released after 91 hours without food. I obviously played Mary Lee, who was the first to be eventually force fed because of that hunger strike that Marion started. And then a few days later, other suffragettes then followed in Marion's example. And obviously, like, if you read any of, you know, the results from that, the following years were like, it affected the health of all these, you know, suffragettes, severely damaged, either due to hunger striking or force feeding.
What's in Westminster, remind me, like, if you go for a tour, there's a mm-hmm. section, there's a suffragette section, isn't there? There's remnants of not a riot, but there was something that happened. Is that?
I think. Oh God, I used to know this ages and ages ago. Please leave a comment if anyone knows. But I think there's one little bit in like a little room where someone was locked. There's so many. I think they might have started, you know, commemorating them, whereas before I think they obviously like hushed under the carpet. But yeah. There was one, there's like a little room where someone was locked in for a while, and I think wrote on the wall. Oh damn, I used to know that, but I can't. If it Nathalie Castle, if anyone wants to Google that in the meantime. But yeah, I think it's, I mean, it's a sign of the times that they're like, oh, let's embrace this now and talk, you know. But I think obviously yeah. then, yeah, I mean, it would get you thrown in jail, like it's madness. But yeah, so Marion's impact was obviously huge on the entire movement, because, you know, hunger strike and force feeding was such a huge, I mean, awful, obviously, but like a huge move forward in the cause in terms of, you know, publicity and everything. And yeah, like apparently it was, you know, that mode of protest influenced, you know, Gandhi and also like James Connolly, who had used, who in Ireland, who'd used similar methods to protest yeah. British rule. So yeah, started quite the horrific trend. And yeah, next up is Bessie Watson. Bessie Watson's cute. She was a kid. She was like, I mean, at her prime in the suffrage movement was like 9 or 10. So she, I know, as well. She was kind of like the suffragettes' secret weapon. So apparently she was encouraged to take, I'm saying apparently like a million times because clearly I'm not a historian. I'm like, apparently, just in case, allegedly. so she was encouraged to take up piping at like 7 or 8 years old because her parents hoped it would strengthen her lungs against tuberculosis, because her aunt Margaret died of the disease. So after she saw this advert for a pageant, in the papers, you know, for like organized by the WSPU, which is the Women's Social and Political Union, Watson and her mother joined the WSPU, and at the age of 9 she was invited to play pipes in the pageant. And several weeks later, when Christabel Pankhurst, is a very very famous suffragette, came to Edinburgh. Anytime they talk about Scotland, I get freaked out. I'm like, this is so weird. I know these places. Like, it just seems like that can't possibly have been happening there. So yeah. Christabel Pankhurst came to Edinburgh to attend a meeting at the King's Theatre, which I've bloody worked in. I played Cinderella in the King's Theatre and I had real ponies. I went to the ball in a helicopter, and Christabel Pankhurst, apparently, from the same stage, did like speeches, and it's weird. At that event at the King's Theatre in Edinburgh, Christabel Pankhurst gave this little girl Watson a brooch. And then later in 1979, Bessie gave that same brooch to Margaret Thatcher. Whatever you believe and think about Margaret Thatcher, she was the first woman to be elected Prime Minister of the UK. So yeah, Bessie gave Margaret Thatcher her brooch. And she kept being involved in the suffragette movement. She wore hair ribbons and the colours of the suffragette campaign to school. Oh, imagine being that boss. Like, oh, yeah, what an absolute dream. And yeah, so when the suffragettes would get, you know, taken away to go into prison, and obviously they at that point would have known, you know, what was waiting for them on the other side at some point. She would play the pipes on the platform of like Waverley Station in Edinburgh while the trains went away that departed with these convicted women's rights campaigners. And she also piped outside the prisons for the suffragettes that were imprisoned there, like while they were going through their hunger strike and while they were going through force feeding. Wow. Yeah. And Nicola Sturgeon, our First Minister, unveiled a plaque for her recently on the close where Bessie was born last year. So you can actually go and see.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So cool.
Oh gosh. Now it's
we
just
Bessie.
Like...
Who knew? Yeah.
Be a legend.
Oh my gosh. I know. I'd love to have been doing that at school. I was just bored in history class.
I mean, I tried playing the pipes when I was growing up and it was hard. I mean, it was hard.
What were you doing at 9 years old, Joanne?
What was I doing at 9 years old? My goodness,
Adam,
me.
Were you helping political movements at 9 years old?
No.
No.
I was thinking I was playing my Tamagotchi. And maybe I was wearing Scousers probably around that area. Around that era, Scousers era.
Is that the word over there for skirt?
No, it's Scousers. Skirt is a skirt and a short. Yeah. Scousers is clearly skirt and trousers.
What, like MC Hammer?
We're in Scotland. We cannot wear skirts. We wear Scousers. So you didn't have that. Oh, it was a whole thing like in the sort of late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah, just trousers with a skirt over the top. But they were like a one piece. Like you bought it as a Scouser. Like, you know.
We're learning so much.
I know. This is my, I should have talked about that. I should have talked about those two Scousers. Here we are.
Okay, hang on. Time out. Let's hit pause for a second to play everyone's favorite under the kilt game, Talking Scots.
Yes, it's my favorite.
Well, because this show is all about learning or proving how much we already don't know. So our producer, Kathleen, and I are going to continue to immerse ourselves in the language of Scots.
Mm-hmm. Yay.
Yeah, that was, what a greeting, Kathleen.
It's always the same. I'm terrified.
Why I expect an ounce of energy.
Well, now we're doing it with pregnancy brain, so get ready, everyone.
Oh God, this is going to be exquisite.
I expect your answers to be twice as smart or twice as silly, because there's twice as much human answering. Oh, gross. So the way this works for you guys, if you don't remember, Joanne will give us a word and then we will blindly guess. We will make a very educated guess on its meaning with no context. And then we may ask Joanne to use it in a sentence if we don't come anywhere near it. Joanne, what is our word today?
Your word today is oakster. Oakster.
Oakster?
Oakster.
Hey. It doesn't go both ways.
I want it to be like a breakfast kitchen appliance, but I think that's just because I'm hearing toaster. And the O sound at the beginning makes me think of oof, which is the French word for egg. So it's like and there's a lot of French influences in Scots. So it makes sense, Kathleen.
So you go that way, and I'm thinking of like orcs from Lord of the Rings.
I mean, I also was
where
like,
my brain is going. Natalie, here again. Natalie's so much better at this than me.
The tenuous links are just the best. I love. That's I just like love so the connections.
I'm not better at this than you. I just go
She's
with
better
my
at guessing
first,
random shit.
My first nonsense guess. I just commit to it.
I know you really do.
You could have been right.
What if one of these times?
I'm going to fry my eggs in my oakster.
What part of speech is it? Is it a verb?
You can't get a clue before your blind guess.
I already gave my blind guess. It has
to do with orcs? Great. Okay.
That's as much as you're
Some
getting
Lord of the Rings shit.
Okay, it is a noun.
It could have been.
We both could have been right. It'd
be like a little orc. Little orkster.
I'm excited to hear the sentence.
For the listeners, Adam just leapt up onto his chair like a little elf.
He's done it like 20 times. His giant legs.
I like the idea though of it being something small though, Kat.
Yeah,
of like see? It basically being like a cutesy term for like this isn't a full barrel of whiskey. It's a little oakster.
It's a love that.
I mean, give me an oakster amount.
It makes it more compact. You can carry it around.
See, so you say oakster.
So there's another little thing. I would say oakster, not oakster. That's a West Coast, East Coast.
See, so mine would go more, the little baby orcs are more of the Dundonian orcs. Yeah,
I mean, it's not helped you much, is it?
No,
really?
No.
But it makes more sense when you account for the sheer size of Adam.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we needed an answer.
Okay.
Yes.
In a sentence, please.
My oakster's pure itchy.
Armpit?
Oh.
Yeah.
Is it an armpit?
The physical.
That's cheating.
That's cheating. It's a podcast. We can't see each other. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that was
I
cheating.
Did. I totally had to. That's so weird. I thought I could.
Because if you think of an itch, you've got to scratch the itch.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I'm
ruined the game.
And why does one need a name for your armpit, I wonder?
Absolutely no idea.
All right, back to the show.
Right, Flora Drummond, who I'm led to believe also wore scousers. That's not true, but it'd be cool if she did. So Flora Drummond was raised on Arran, and she, okay, there's so many cool things she did. None of these are in order, but I'm just going to like give you a highlight list. So she hired a boat to basically just shout from the river at various different politicians. She also slipped into 10 Downing Street while another woman distracted the guard. She was, and I will say this woman is like, she's small, but she's mighty. Like she's not easily missable. And she was arrested 9 times, and she did persistent hunger striking. So that left her with a lot of health problems. And she was actually a pallbearer at the funeral of Emmeline Pankhurst, who was obviously like the leader of the entire movement. Flora Drummond, that woman, actually features in The Suffragettes with Lucy Worsley, the drama documentary that I did, who was played by the wonderful Aisha Jameson. So yeah, she's brilliant in that, and yeah, gosh, she's just a badass. But she was nicknamed the General because she had a habit of leading these women's rights marches wearing a full on military style uniform with like an officer's cap and epaulets and riding on a large horse.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it, right?
I'm very aware that I'm making light of a lot of this. It's obviously like not light, but they are so aware of like irony and like tongue in cheek. It's just brilliant. Like it's just, I guess that's what I'm sort of celebrating, because I'm just like, what an, like, just to have the audacity. It's the audacity.
Yeah, but and it's also like, it highlights the power that we have, right? Like, in all seriousness, like, we kind of forget as an electorate the power that we... The power rests with us, because, like, these politicians do work for us. Now, I know at the time, obviously, it was women fighting for their own rights to be able to vote. But that powerful movement and to buck against it all and to push against the status quo actually worked. And yeah. I think we forget how powerful that is and how we are.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely not an easy... You know, it was like decade. I think because people obviously think about the suffragettes and they think about that small period of history where like they were militant or, you know, they were, you know, breaking windows or whatever. But that's only because that was their absolute last resort after like decades of campaigning, you know, peacefully.
Exactly.
But yeah, so she, Flora Drummond, also became the main earner in her family when her husband lost her job, which is like also just like way ahead of its time. And she was a manager in a typewriter factory.
What year was that? What year was that?
1990. Oh, see, don't ask me years. I told you the very beginning.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot.
I actually on purpose took out a lot of the years of all of this research because I was like, see if I see years, I'll get scared. I need to believe that this is happening now or I won't. I don't know.
Okay. No, it's grand. It's grand. We'll find out.
So when Mary Phillips, who was a suffragette, when she was released from prison, she had served the longest prison sentence that far, which was 3 months. She was welcomed by Flora Drummond with bagpipes and other suffragettes posed in tartan. And you can look this up, this picture of them all just dressed in tartan outside a prison. And they had this little banner with a slogan that said, "Ye maunae tramp on the Scotch thistle laddie." And "maunae" means you must not. How badass is that? You must not tramp on the Scotch thistle laddie. She also... Flora Drummond was the leader of the WSPU Cycling Scouts, who set about the country on bicycles, spreading the message of women's suffrage. Oh my God, just an absolute, from horse to bike.
I love thinking about how many things were accomplished on bike specifically, like when women were doing things in history because it was the only real way that we were allowed to get around.
Yeah, exactly. And it's fast. It's like, oh, break a window, bike away. 100%. I did an advert for a bike company where that was the script, where this like sort of suffragette woman was like just really bored with her husband and cooking breakfast every day, and then she found the freedom of a bike and off she went.
It works.
Yeah,
it works. Yeah,
buy a bike, start a new life.
Start a new life. Yeah, down the cobblestones. Like, oh, this is something else as well. Yeah,
is it like a standard part of a bug out bag for folks in espionage or other situations where you might have a bug out bag, that it's not just like a foldable bike in your bag and like a passport and some cash.
I was going to say a bug. What is a bug out bag?
Yeah, I didn't know what you were talking about there. That's a phrase that is not.
Is that an Americanism?
You know that moment. It's a go bag. You know that moment in Captain America: Civil War where Sebastian Stan as Winter Soldier punches and it looks like he's going to punch Chris Evans, but he punches just past him into the floorboards and there's a bag and he grabs that bag and that bag is everything he needs. That's a bug out bag.
Got you. That was a very specific.
And, yeah, that was.
I actually have seen that film because I hadn't watched any of Marvel, and then my partner is sitting me down, and we're going through a Marvel. Yeah,
Marvel at night.
So I actually am like an absolute pro on this. I'm like, I know exactly what moment you're talking about. Yeah.
I think about that fight scene a lot.
It was very good. Okay, so next up, it is not Sebastian Stan. Unfortunately, it is even better, Grace Cadell, who was even better because she was a single mum who never married. But during the First World War, also she's Scottish, obviously, because that's how they all are. She adopted 4 children. And then when she eventually died, she left them equal shares in her will. So that's, yeah, just, I mean, imagine being a single mum. Also, she was a doctor and she's got 4 kids that she's yeah. It's just madness. Wow. One of her daughters was called Grace Emmeline, clearly named after Emmeline Pankhurst, and is thought to have been adopted as a newborn from a young girl at the Magdalene House in Edinburgh, where unwed girls would have their children removed and made to work in workhouse conditions as punishment for becoming pregnant. So Grace comes in and you know, takes these babies basically and raises them as her own. And she also cared for 6 suffragettes that were recovering from hunger strikes. So quite often they would be directly released into her care in her own home on 145 Leith Walk. Very specific. So yeah, she would like look after all of these suffragettes that were obviously had gone through unimaginable pain. And in 1912, there's your year, Adam, don't ask me again.
Thanks. Thank you.
This all takes place in 1912. as a result of refusing to pay taxes as a protest, her furniture was seized and publicly sold at a cross within the Royal Mail. And she just thought, I'm going to use this. So she turned the gathering into a suffrage meeting while all her furniture is being sold. She's like, yo, have you heard of this? Which is so cool.
That's resourceful. And you know, it was really advertising itself. So
yeah. It's like, buy one, get a vote free. Brilliant. And in another act of rebellion, Grace refused to stamp the insurance cards of her 5 servants. And she was fined £50 by the Glasgow High Court, and 50 quid back then. I mean, 50 quid now is a lot of money. That would have been a lot of money. And when she was fined this, she had to go on trial. And the trial made the newspapers because other suffragettes were throwing apples at the judge. In the courthouse and hitting the jurors accidentally. And Grace agreed to pay her fine, but a 50 quid fine with a sack full of copper coins as a further defiance. So she's just like turning up with like this massive sack of like 2 pence, well, not even 2 pences, 1 pence, 6 pence, whatever. So yeah, another badass.
It seems like the punishments for these women were, here's this one punishment, and then as an additional punishment, we just created this other thing that you have.
Yeah, for getting pregnant. Like, men were not involved in this transaction whatsoever. Don't get me started. That's enough. We'll have one podcast on on Sebastian Stan fight calls, and we'll have another one on my anger of what's happening to women today. Yes. In July 2022. Yes. Oh my gosh, right, I'm gonna need to calm down. We'll go to an artist next, because, you know, let's chill out. So Ethel Moorhead was an artist and a tax resister. You're talking about Adam talking about just like the people having the power, like, I just like, just resist it, paying your taxes. No, I'm not encouraging that, but
I mean, I just want to interject, I found this calculator online, okay? Mm-hmm. And I put in £50 in 1912, and what it's worth today. I don't know if this is right. It's saying it's 6,085.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
£2.
Just over £6,000. It's saying, and I don't think that's right. I think that's wrong. I think everyone should.
Maybe that's
heads.
Wrong. Maybe all the rulers are wrong. And maybe that's my sources that's wrong. Was maybe a Wikipedia one. Maybe, I mean, also, definitely said 50, but it could have been 5.
Money is made up.
Money, yeah, is a made up thing.
It's all made up.
I mean, I actually looked that up several places because two. When I say several, I mean two, because I was like, £50, that's a lot of money. And another one said £50. So, yeah, but then I don't know if you're a doctor, if you're like a doctor, but then a female doctor. I don't know. I didn't even know that was possible at the time. Maybe she's a doctor on the side. I don't know. Again, comment if you know any more.
please write in if you know things.
Because this person that we've got on is useless.
No, we don't know things.
No, so that's why we started this, because we're trying to learn things. We're okay, not like good. History buffs.
Fine, because I'm also learning. I'm learning as I'm speaking. As it comes out my mouth, I'm like, oh, well, yeah, that's funny information. Ethel Moorhead, artist. She was the first Scottish suffragette to be forced to be fed. So Mary Lee in England was the first English suffragette, and Ethel Moorhead was the first Scottish suffragette. Just, this is a blanket statement, which I think really sums her up. She threw an egg at Winston Churchill. That's all you need to know.
Four dates, if anyone cares about dates, which we've established, fuck dates. But in case you're wondering, because Joanne said that Mary Lee was the first in England, the first suffragette to be force-fed. She was force-fed in 1909, and Ethel Moorhead was force-fed in 1914.
Oh, okay. There, wow. So that just shows you how much other force-feeding was going on.
It also seems like, if Marion Dunlop was one of the first hunger strikes, that was also arrested in 1909. So that means that, like, the English had enough of the hunger strikes by the time Mary was arrested that they were like, nope, fuck it.
That's so interesting. I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know there was that much.
Just the thought process behind it. I mean, I've seen what it looks like on like documentaries and stuff, and it's like hideous.
Oh yeah, it was the most bizarre. It's probably the most bizarre day at work that I've ever had going into. Because we had on that docudrama, we had like quite a small crew, and they had this like within the studio, they'd set up the cell that looked completely like a prison cell. You know, there was one camera, and in there was only really the camera. The director was behind looking at a monitor. So apart from the camera being there, that felt horrendously real. Like, and I had a tube up my nose. That it was an extra that's playing the doctor, and he was like pretending to feed it through, but it was actually starting to hurt. You know, like when you sort of pretend to feed something through, but it is actually moving. And I had to like stop it at one point because it was actually like going too far. And I was like, cry. I mean, I obviously broke this chair, which I'm very sorry about. But yeah, it was, they had a stunt person involved and everything. They had elbow pads and knee pads because I was like meant to like, you know, really try and, you know, fight in any way I could. And it's just like, that once was so traumatic. And then, you know, it cuts to like the other woman in the cells hearing that sound and hearing her crying and hearing her throwing up and everything. Like, oh goodness, I'm getting chills all over my body. Like, yeah. it's just it's just an unthinkable, and we all do that, don't we? Because it's just like when you go through trauma for anything, either politically or whatever, apparently it's a thing that your body can't remember pain. Like it can't physically, like it can't physically recreate that pain. So it's just so easy to kind of, you know, brush over it. And but yeah, doing that was, and watching it back as well, like when it was eventually on, oh, it's just, and some of them went through, like, I think some people went through like 200 of those, like one person over the course of months. Jeez. Yeah. And people did. So although Emily Wilde and Davidson was like, you know, the first, you know, martyr in the fight, and that she, you know, very directly, purposefully or otherwise, died campaigning with the King's Horse, there were other martyrs, because people did die from their injuries later on. Like, you know, there, it was just long bouts of illness and injuries and stuff. So like a lot of people eventually died from their injuries from that, either from hunger strike or force feeding.
And from the force feeding, yeah, because yeah. There's a reaction that can happen when you are fighting against force on you. It can create like it's like a mix of adrenaline and something. It's not like that lactic acid doses. That's a few good men, isn't it? That's what I'm like. That's where I've got that from. But it's like, see, it's something. Something can happen in that struggle, which has a knock on effect, which then creates like health problems down the line. So yeah.
I mean, it's a chip. I actually remember like my lines from that thing, because in that docudrama, it was like it took the suffragettes' real life diary entries and words that they had written, like either in prison or elsewhere, and we directed them straight to camera, you know, in full costume. So like there was, you know, dramatic things, but also like there was direct address to the camera. And like I remember me as Mary Lee saying, like, the tube is pushed down 20 inches, like it's in the absolute gut of your stomach, like and all the damage that's doing all the way, yeah. And also they like say just the shock for her, that because she was the first person, she had no idea what was coming. So they were like taking her to a room, and she can see a sheet on the ground and a chair in the middle of the cell, and she has no idea what's about to happen to her.
Wait a minute, stop. Right, listen, like but it's been a while, Nat.
Yeah.
Since we recorded, mm-hmm. isn't it? It's been a while, so I assume you've been practicing quite rigorously on your Scottish accent. And
outside of sending you voice notes where I'm reading excerpts from a romance novel that takes place in Scotland, no, I have not.
Oh. Well, I mean, I'd love to hear how you're getting on.
Great. I don't think this is a game. I think this is an attack. But
not
Kathleen,
at
all. What's my line?
Can I ease you back in gently into season two, Natalie? So from the 1995 wonderful film about farmyard animals, Babe, the quote is, "That'll do, pig. That'll do."
I have to envision Babe. Really take myself back to the farm.
That is helpful.
That'll do, pig. That'll do.
Oh, that's all right. It was all right. I just think it sounded like you were choking on the word do.
Well, because I was really sad and proud of my pig.
Okay, well, I think we should refer to our guest.
Yes.
Yeah, I was actually pleasantly surprised. I would give that a 7 out of 10. It was let you down slightly. You're just doing too much work. That's all.
We need to also start mapping, like, what region Natalie is randomly from every time she does this.
That was Scots. I would say, if I heard that, I'd be like, that is a Scottish person who is slightly unhinged.
Who's maybe lived in America for a bit.
Who maybe talks to their pigs?
Yes, let's question that first.
And I mean, I think 7 out of 10 is a good mark, right?
I'll take that. That's pretty high.
I think it also coincides with the length of the sentence.
And the fact that it's the same line pretty much back to back instead of...
Yeah.
If you get the first half right, you're grand. Yeah, that's
sonnet.
A fair point.
I think Kathleen's done you a solid there.
Yep, it'll never happen again, don't worry.
Yeah, it's only downhill for here. How about, because obviously in Shrek, he Is he quoting Babe? Can you say, what about that'll do donkey, that'll do... I'm like,
requests.
Even thinking about saying the word donkey in a Scottish accent feels offensive to the people of Scotland.
And that's originally in a Scottish accent, so that helps.
That'll do donkey. Donkeys.
That was right, yeah.
That was good. Say it again.
That'll do donkey.
That's... I'd say that's all right.
See, I would never have given her that because it is said in a Scottish accent.
Yes.
In the movie.
God, Kathleen, you're a taskmaster. Oh,
says the person that loves ridiculing and watching Natalie suffer every time.
Yeah, okay.
Well, again, my best feedback is always, I've done worse.
That's right.
As long as I've always done worse, I will count it as an improvement. Back to the show.
Yes.
I'm glad we got to this deep point because I'm so determined to be like, make it light, make him laugh. But like, it is so, I can't actually think about it too strongly, or I really get quite upset. So instead, I'm going to talk about it. She was caught attacking this showcase that the thing that contains the historical sword at the Wallace Monument near Stirling. She attacked it with a stone that was wrapped in a note that said, "Your liberties were won by the sword. Release the women who are fighting for their liberties," which I think is just beautiful. Yeah, absolutely beautiful. She called the judge an unjust old man to his face, which I thought was great. And she also had, and one of her trials later on, she tried to object that the judge had misdirected the jury. Oh, she like led her own defense, by the way. And when she was sentenced to 8 months imprisonment, she turned to the suffragette attendees and shouted, "No surrender," which resulted in total chaos. Everybody else shouting, more apples were thrown. And they were all singing. And apparently in the Glasgow Herald the next day, it ran a cartoon titled Halloween at the High Court. I also have two little notable mentions that I couldn't fit into my favourite five, but I've made the list anyway. Agnes Brown, who lived at 125 Prince Street, facing Edinburgh Castle, not too shabby, Agnes. Her dad was actually an activist for women's rights. So he opposed taxes and went to jail. So yeah, Dad of the Year award right there. And our dad ran a number of fruit shops under the title of William Brown and Sons, but he was actually training his daughters, Agnes and Jessie, not to ever submit to these ridiculous laws that he was basically jailed for. And Agnes and some other women walked the whole way from Edinburgh to London for the cause. They had these white scarves and green hats. And while they traveled, they were gathering signatures for this petition for women's rights. And they walked about 15 miles per day because they wanted to attend a session each day all the way down. So it took them 5 weeks to walk all the way from Edinburgh to London. My last notable mention is Mary Maloney, who did a lot of work in Scotland for the suffragette movement, but was actually Irish. And this is just such a great way to end. She basically hacked Winston Churchill's by-election campaign in Dundee in 1908. There we go. Yeah. And this is how she hacked it. So basically, she was like wanting him to talk about the suffrage movement and he wouldn't. So she basically went, well, fine, I won't let you talk about anything. And she followed him around with a giant bell, just ringing it. And he was apparently raging. And yeah, a lot of the meetings had to be cancelled because she was just like, what, Winston? Can't hear you. And just like rang her bell.
That's so much better than a filibuster.
I know.
It's genius.
Mary Maloney, yeah. So use it, take it.
Shame.
Get a bell. Oh, use it whenever you want. Oh, see if there was like something on the internet. What we need is like just basically a gif of someone ringing a bell, and that can tell people to shut up on the internet because there's no way of doing that on Twitter. Everywhere. But yeah, that's my tip of the day.
Okay, so Agnes walked 15 miles every day for five weeks, which I did the math, means that she did in fact walk over 500 miles. if we're talking that's all it. 7 days of the week, Agnes walked 525 miles.
Oh my God.
But not
that's
to
amazing.
Fall down at your door to listen to a lecture.
Yeah, exactly.
She would have walked 500 more.
She would have.
Exactly. She definitely would have. So anytime you hear that, just think of Agnes Brown.
Just think of Agnes.
125 Princess Street, looking across at the castle.
Yeah, gosh.
Getting her world rocked at 1 p.m. every day.
Skadoosh. I mean, the thing is though, like, Joanne, you write as well. I mean, there's like some brilliant stories in there. Right.
Yeah, this is getting made into something for sure. Please no one else do it, because just don't
declare that Joanne has.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, this is the IP. This is an intellectual property right here. That's mine. Back off, or I will ring my bell whenever you try and pitch it. Oh, you're pitching it to HBO. Ding, ding, ding.
I'm having a pitch meeting through this.
Unless it's another female writer, then we'll team up and we'll take them down together. Because, yeah, contact me.
Please email me. Joanne, I know that you also wanted to tell us the story behind your name.
Yes. Well, so I have a clan. My clan is the Bell Clan, because my name is actually Joanne Bell. Joanne Thompson is a stage name. Oh. It's a very long story, but basically I bumped into Emma Thompson in Central Station in Glasgow because it was the time of the ash cloud and no one could fly. So she was in the Central Station. And I was like, hey, what up? I went up and spoke to her. I was actually like writing. I had my equity name thing, changing my name on my lap, trying to figure out what name to go with. And Thompson was actually an old family name, but I was like, that's boring. I don't want that. And then I bumped into her and I was doing Angels in America at the time. And I was like, isn't Tony Kushner a brilliant writer? And she was like, yes, he is. And we talked for a while and it was great. So then once I left that meeting, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go with Thompson. So that's why I'm Joanne Thompson. Anyway, all that to say, I'm Clan Bell through and through.
I mean, I like that you like a callback, don't you?
I love that.
I mean, you love a callback. I mean, we're talking about bells and your surname is
Bell. Oh, yeah. Why have I not even realized that?
It's barely a callback if we've talked about them back to back. I don't know that it's coming back.
It is in my memory because I forgot.
The moment you finished telling your story, you were like, that's it. Erase that from my brain.
What a missed segue opportunity. I cannot believe that I didn't even think of going, and also I'll tell you a little secret about one idea.
Talking about Bell. fun fact.
We can edit it in seamlessly.
Oh yeah, please do. Yeah. auto-tune me or something. But yeah, I mean, this is some stuff about Clan Bell. But yeah, they've been everything. They've been like, they started as knights in northern France. They were at the Norman Conquest, the Crusades. They fought for Scottish independence. The Scottish, you maybe have spoken about this before, like the Reavers at the Scottish border. I don't know if you've ever heard. Yeah.
We haven't talked about it on this podcast, but I would tell our listeners, we had Jack Loudon on Shared History, which was originally Under the Kilt Parent podcast. So go listen to Jack's episode. Adam's on it.
Yeah.
We talk all about the Border Reavers.
I do not know a lot, so thank God you never asked me. But yeah, the Bells apparently were known as one of the Devil's Dozen, who were the 13 strongest and most active of the raiding clans. Also, the Bells were super friendly because at the Battle of Solway, Moss, the Bells from Scotland and England were lined up and like obviously told to fight, but they were like, no, that's my cousin. So the rest of England and Scotland are like full on warring out, but the Bells turned into a family reunion.
Get the bunting out, boys, yeah, and girls. Know the swords.
Also, I mean, obviously, probably the most famous Scottish Bell is Alexander Graham Bell, who,
yes,
you know, and obviously invented the telephone, which is basically what we're using right now, except a really fancy version of it. I looked him up. I didn't really know a lot about him. And so basically a childhood illness left his mum mostly deaf, and she was relying on this ear trumpet to basically hear anything. So when Alexander was a kid, he would speak close to his mum's forehead so that she could feel the vibrations of his voice. And then later on, his wife, Mabel Hubbard, who was a student and his 10 years his junior, let's not comment on that, who had completely lost her hearing from a bout of scarlet fever. Basically, it was living and working with the hearing impaired that sparked that interest. I'd had no idea about that. And also, he helped Helen Keller so much so that she dedicated her autobiography to Bell. And she credited him with, and I quote, opening the door through which I could pass from darkness into light. Isn't that lovely? And the two have remained lifelong friends, apparently. Also, the decibel is named after Alexander Graham Bell. Didn't know that.
I did not know that.
I mean, I have to do this because I always have to do this because of just who I am as a person. But the invention of the telephone is kind of a contested thing in history now. A lot of historians say that Bell didn't technically invent it. He just...
I have heard this.
...the next level, and it was an Italian immigrant named Meucci, Antonio Meucci, who invented it. But interestingly, a similar kind of inspiration sort of story for where things took off for him, mm-hmm. Two Bells. His wife became paralyzed at some point later in life, and he had already been toying with the technology and basically connected her bedroom to his workshop through like a kind of a primary setup. So it's interesting. Right. Them were like inspired by needing to solve a problem for like a family member.
Yeah, and also just to go back on the contested thing, I think it was who registered with their lawyer first or something. I'd heard that is what they go, well, that's the person.
Yeah, it's Meucci couldn't afford the definitive patent.
Yeah.
Oh, now I feel bad.
It's like gotta do.
So, but Graham Bell's was his device was different, but they had shared some similarities. But that's
I mean, he was I hope a good guy and helped at least some people, but I kind of also prefer your story.
Well, I just know that off the top of my head because we do a bit on shared history where we talk about things we discovered that week that are just us claiming things as our own discoveries, because that's what 80% of history is.
So true.
And Joanne, are you related to any of these Bells?
I mean, I don't know for sure. I mean, I guess. I don't know, like, definitely. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I did do the ancestry.com thing, and it was all Scottish babies through and through. I was basically Scottish and a little bit of, like, Norwegian, like, 2%. So, probably.
If you showed up on a battlefield and there were other Bells on the other sides, would you, like, stop and have a picnic?
100%. That's clearly in my DNA, because I do not understand violence. I don't understand war. I am like, everything can be talked out. Let's have a picnic and get the bunting up. Like, 100%. So that I've obviously got that from the Reavers. My great ancestors.
You have my vote.
Great.
Relevant.
Ah, no, that's a good callback.
That was except that in America, we got some women got the vote 2 years after some women got the vote in Scotland. So in that case, we were following close behind you because it's 1920 for the 19th Amendment, which did not actually guarantee women the right to vote. The phrasing of it is that you cannot be prohibited from voting because of your gender, but it doesn't actually guarantee anything.
Wow.
Wordplay.
Yep.
That's how they get you.
Couldn't get it through the other way. They also couldn't get it through just saying, if you're a citizen, you have the right to vote, which is why it's considered constitutional to deny prisoners the right to vote.
Wow.
America's depressing.
Yeah. I mean, it's all.
Sorry to bring it down to my level over here across the pond.
Sometimes I feel like America, if it was a person, it just needs to have like a little hug or something. Like, are you okay? Are you okay?
The majority of us would love that. Actual majority of this country would be like, yes, please help us.
Anyway, but that's not what we're here for. No, but Joanne, thank you so much for bringing all that information to us. It has been very entertaining. And also kind of mind-blowing a little bit.
Joanne, I can tell people on the internet where to find the Suffragettes film. If you have BritBox, Americans, you can stream it if you have BritBox. If you don't, I can't help you. But where else on the internet can people go to see your work or follow you?
On the internet, I'm everywhere. I'm on... I am on Instagram and Twitter because I just can't get enough at Joanne Thompson without a P 22. Thompson without the P is apparently the Scottish spelling, so I just like to be Scottish through and through. And yeah, I've also got a website, joannethompson.co.uk. Reach out, give me a follow, say hello, correct me if I get anything wrong, please, or if you have any other bits of knowledge about this stuff that I don't know, please tell me because I want to hear more about it.
And tell us, you can send us any corrections to underthekiltpod@gmail.com. That sounds right. It's our first episode back, guys. I haven't had to say this out loud in a minute. But we also, you can also submit those via our website because we have a new website. It's underthekiltpodcast.com. You can drop us a line there as well. As always, we'd love it if you left us a rating and a review on Ye Old Apple Podcasts. We have some reviews, but they're on the shared history feed since that is where we debuted. So please tell us you love us again. We're all actors and we demand constant validation and positive. Oh,
like me.
And you can like us and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Under the Kilt Pod.
I just want to thank Joanne again for coming on to be our first guest at the top of season two. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's been brilliant. And until the next time, pals, stay breezy. This episode of Under the Kilt was produced by Kathleen Mueller Mason and edited by Natalie Younger. Original theme by Tyler Collins, aka 2 Meter Man. Additional music by Gareth Spin. Original art by Sarah Cruz. Thanks again to our lovely guest, Joanne Thompson, and the team at Broadsheet Radio.